You are now listening to Discover Your Potential with renowned radio talk show host and certified holistic practitioner, Cindy Gilman. So listen, participate, be inspired. Know that you can discover your potential. Here she is, Cindy Gilman.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is Discover Your Potential, and I'm Cindy Gilman. Thank you for spending this hour with me. I just want to say I genuinely appreciate all the listeners. I know some of you have been listening to past broadcasts, but today we are live and streaming. Wait, let me pinch myself. Yes, we're live. We are live and streaming nationwide and worldwide. Thanks to modern technology, and especially thanks to Doug from BBS Radio. You will have the opportunity to call in if you care to. The number is 888-627-6008. I do want to thank Doug from BBS Radio for his expertise and helping to navigate this program. When you do call in, please give your real first name, or you may not get a real answer if someone else is listening with that name, and a specific topic or question and where you're calling from. Since this is National Breast Cancer Awareness Month, I'd like to dedicate this program in honor and memory of my dear mother. She recovered from breast cancer, and we had her until she was 93. We miss her, and we love her, but we know she is with us. Yes, she's leaving nickels, and we are finding nickels in very unlikely places and times. And this she said before passing: I will send you nickels to let you know I'm around. This program, Discover Your Potential, is aimed to inspire, enlighten, encourage, and motivate you to look within and to listen to our wonderful guests. And you'll be hearing about their journey, their creative process, and how the universe has pointed them in a direction to live up to their potential. And some people ask me, why do you use the word potential? Well, potential indicates the many possibilities that are out there. And so we realize there is something more. If we feel that we are working or living in what we think is where we belong, something may occur, and we realize there's something more we are to do. I myself found this to be the case, starting out as a child performer. You'll have the opportunity to hear from others about their journey. And as I mentioned, you're welcome to call and share your ideas. We have an absolutely wonderful guest today, Hobie Ford. Hobie Ford is Goldenrod Puppets, but Hobie Ford is more than just a puppeteer. He's an engineer and an architect of sorts, because not only has he been a puppeteer for 43 years, as a puppet maker, puppet performer, he also creates and designs his own scenery. So he's a scenic designer as well. He writes his stories, so he's a storyteller, some of them about his own life experience. He travels throughout the world, through the U.S., doing performances and teaching workshops. He just returned from a whirlwind 2-week tour around the country, So I am very grateful and appreciative of his time with us today. So it is my great pleasure to introduce to you Hobie Ford and Hobie Ford's Goldenrod Puppets.
Jeepers, creepers, where'd you get those peepers? So, Hobie, where did you get the idea for those peepers?
Well, peepers are a little set of eyeballs that you put on your hand to turn it into a puppet.
A friend helped me get that toy together and get it patented and manufactured, Regina Marscheider of here in a nearby in Virginia Beach. And we launched this company over 20 years ago, and she helped me with the patent, the very first patent. But it's a toy that's traveled really all over the world. It's a charming little puppet because you can put it in your pocket wherever you go. You can pull out these little set of eyes, put them on your hand, and entertain. And sometimes I even make small gifts of them after the performance.
Oh, nice. You know, I watched your video, and I was not only amazed, but I was mesmerized by your process. So,
thank you.
First of all, I'm your travels, the shows that you've put together. After your travels and stay at the Native American community, your program Turtle Island Tales, and only someone who is familiar with Native American customs would understand what Turtle Island represents.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us about your process. Tell us about your travels. We want to hear everything.
Okay, well, I guess it all started. I was in art college studying to be a visual artist in 1975, but the art scene back then was working with lots of abstraction and... I went to an art show one night, and I thought I was in the wrong building, and then someone pointed out there was a red string running through the building, and I just didn't get it. And I thought, you know, a lot of these people, my fellow students, really are into abstract art, and it just really didn't do anything for me. And so I was sort of reconsidering what I would do, and on New Year's Eve in 1975, I closed my eyes and thought, if I get a good idea, I will give it a try. And so I had been reading Paramahansa Yogananda's autobiography of a yogi, and his face popped into my head, and I thought, oh, I'll paint portraits of yogi masters and enlightened masters. And then in my imagination, I imagined that his face was a marionette face.
Interesting.
And instantly my mind went back to being in the fifth grade when a marionette show came to my boarding school, and I was the kid who got to help set up the show because I always had my homework done because you couldn't go home that weekend, and I was very homesick if you didn't do all your homework. So the reward was I got to help this puppeteer load in, and I would later find out that he was a very accomplished, renowned marionettist in the New England area, part of the National Marionette Theater. David Sirodiak Sr. Yeah, David Sirodiak Sr. And so really right away I dove right into marionettes when I got back to college, and struggling with marionettes, I went into New York City, and there I met from the phone book the creator of the Lonely Goat Herd scene from the Sound of Music movie.
Oh yes.
His name was Bill Baird, and he was sort of the Jim Henson of the time. And when I went up to get his, he had a wonderful book, and I had the library book's version. I thought, well, I'll get him to autograph that. And he asked me my name, and I said, Hobie Ford. And he looked at me, and he said, you're from Rowayton, Connecticut. I knew your grandfather. Don't you move. And
wow.
When he came back, he visited all his fans, and they left, and I was there in the theater, and he explained to me that many, many years, a decade or two before, he had met my grandfather on a sailboat, and sailors would pull their boats up together sometime in the evenings.
Mm-hmm.
And so on one side, Bill Baird pulled up, and of all people, on the other side, Buckminster Fuller pulled up.
Hmm.
And Buckminster Fuller had a cuboctahedron, this polyhedron model that he was playing with, made out of dowels and rubber, surgical rubber tubing, vertices. And Bill liked it so much that he created a puppet from it that was a classic number in his variety show after the show. So Bill showed me how to string my marionette. I was having troubles with it, and he took me through his studio and brought me through a process in about an hour and a half. Show got me started, and it was a big, it was a huge inspiration, and so I was off and running.
That's an interesting story. Now, for our audience, what are rod puppets?
Okay, so rod puppets, you think of a marionette as a string puppet from above. Rod puppets are puppets generally operated from below or nowadays from any direction, using rods instead of your hand, let's say, and
mm-hmm.
Instead of strings.
I mean,
and I got into this type of puppet after that first spring semester at art college and getting launched into puppetry. I traveled west. I was going to go to California, and along the way, I met a Native American family, and they were just in the beginning stages of building a small community. And
where was
so
that?
A lot of people. That was out in Carlin, Nevada. It's on the mm-hmm. Nevada desert, and lots of visitors would come through. Some people, curious people from California, Native Americans just passing across the country. There was sort of a network of places they could come and stay and visit, know they could camp out or what have you.
Who is the Hopi?
Well, there was one old man, a Hopi man, came through. His name was Grandfather David Manangwa,
mm.
and he was a 104-year-old Hopi elder.
Wow.
And a friend of mine from the community had been to his house, and the man had recorded some of his songs for him. And so when he got back to the desert community, we learned his songs. And then a few months later, Grandfather David arrived at the community. He asked for a drum, and he played. I had a drum, so he borrowed my drum and was playing some songs. And then he turned to a couple of us and said, "Here, you play me a song." So a couple of us played him his own song that he had composed years ago, you know, 40, 50 years before that
wow.
moment. And he looked at us and he said, "Oh, you know that one too." But of course it was his own song. And so, it was hilarious. And we asked him, "Well, what does the song mean?" And he looked at us with a wry smile and he said, "Taking a big buckskin to the pawn shop." And we all laughed. He had a great sense of
humor. He sounds like he was a trip.
Oh, he was a teeny little man, but he was full of life and exuberance. And he lived one of the Hopi mesas in a community that had been there for hundreds and hundreds of years.
Is he a medicine man?
I wouldn't say so. No. He was a singer and he was a political activist. A number
mm-hmm.
of Native Americans had heard of a native prophecy of going to a big glass building in the east and talking with world leaders. And
mm-hmm.
so they went to several of these Native elders, traveled to New York to the UN in the 60s, before Native rights were even really in the main buzz politically, which really came about in the 70s more like. And so they traveled, and it was Mad Dog Anderson, Rolling Thunder, and David Manangwa and the Hopi elder, and a few others, I believe. But they went and gave a big talk about their prophecies of the importance of coming together. So he was, I'd say, a political activist, probably most known as.
yes, they need to need it, and they still do need to be treated mm-hmm. with more respect.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So is this where you got the inspiration to write the and do the show Turtle Island?
Yeah, so I had left, after a couple of years, I left the community, and I was a couple who had been at the community as well. We traveled to North Carolina and got a little cabin near my rod puppet mentor, who I was sort of apprenticing under loosely. And we would sing the songs at night sometimes to remind us of the camp and all. And the songs were really, you know, they were not just Shoshone where we were living. Shoshone territory is where the camp was, not on a reservation. But a lot of people would come through the community, would bring their songs. And so I had all these songs, and then I heard a story or two, one from a Shumash elder, and Grandfather Samu was his name, from like Ojai, California area, Santa Barbara area. And I had the idea to put together a show. I had built a Native American character and took it to a festival, and some of the Henson people were there, Jim Henson's company, mm-hmm. and they suggested I send some video to Jim and that he might fund a show, and so he agreed to fund the program, and so I put together a show of Native American stories and songs and music pertaining to, you know, if there was a bear in the scene, I would add a bear song, and there was a bird, I would do a bird song and inject it into the work. And it went over really well, and I performed it at the Kennedy Center.
And these were rod puppets.
These were shadow puppets, actually.
Oh, shadow puppets.
Yeah, and then there was a Native American character. And, you know, since, Cindy, I've put that show away. I feel like it's, you know, at the time, I felt like it was appropriate and good, and I had seen some Native American material that done by non-natives that was pretty off and offensive in ways. But eventually, I came to realize that, you know, even for me to be doing it was really not appropriate, and I just didn't know any better at the time. But I feel like it's more important for Native Americans to tell their stories,
and so
I was really sort of perpetrating a cultural appropriation of the material, even though, you know, I'd been accepted into this community and whatnot. I felt like at a point that it was, you know, it was no longer, if it ever was appropriate, it wasn't really appropriate to do anymore now.
You know, earlier today when I was outdoors, I saw a butterfly. I saw a monarch butterfly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And a little bird. And I said, oh, today's Hobie Day.
Yeah.
Somebody's mm-hmm. sending me a monarch butterfly. Now,
yeah.
I know nature is very important to you. And
yeah.
Can we talk a little bit about the show Sea Song?
Sure. Yeah, so Sea Song came along. I had done a couple of shows based on monarch butterflies. I had walked up on one turning into a chrysalis at one time.
Mm-hmm.
And that inspired a whole show about metamorphosis, and that inspired a show about their amazing migration to Mexico. That little one you saw is on its way to Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And about 3 years ago, my mother had passed away, and she had really introduced me to nature, but especially to birds. She would take me as a teen. You know, we might get up at 4 in the morning and drive 2 hours to see an owl in someone's barn that it flew in there, a rare owl. Or we would get up at dawn and drive to the beach and go bird watching. And she was a photographer and taught me photography as well as we were doing this. And so
I wonder if she sent me that monarch butterfly.
Yeah, you never know, because she inspired me about monarch butterflies as well. But it also goes back into the family. A great-grandfather had written a book about monarchs when he was a Harvard professor. He wrote the first book on milkweed butterflies, as they were called back then. So it was really kind of a multi-generational interest. But on
your mother sounds like a wonderful person.
Oh, she was a wonderful person, and I had a dream about a flock of pelicans,
mm-hmm.
and there was a favorite beach in South Carolina that she would go to called Edisto Beach, and on Edisto Island, and I would take my wife and young children there when they were growing up, and there was always this wonderful parade of pelicans that would fly by. And so in this dream, I dreamt of a fan-like structure, and on the end of each spoke of this fan, like a Japanese fan, was a little pelican.
Mm.
And in the dream, all of the elements of engineering that I would need to know to make this puppet were in the dream. And so in the morning, I woke up and realized what I had dreamt and went down to my shop and made a little prototype of it, and it worked so perfectly. And it reminded me of her, of my mother. I decided to create a whole show based on this flock of pelicans, or really a jumping off point. And I didn't want it to be biographical of her, but really sort of the essence of her. So the story I devised was about a boy who lives in the city and is addicted to video games, as so many kids are today. It's a screen time is a real issue in our culture, not for kids, but for adults. So in the story, his father and mother send him to stay with his grandmother, who's inspired by my mother, who lived at a remote beach away from the internet and television. And there the boy gets inspired by her great love, which in the story is sea turtles. So mm-hmm. it's about the boy going into nature, discovering nature for the first time and getting inspired and getting away from his video games and exploring the richness of nature.
Interesting. Now this, you've had other, this is so spiritual and empathic. You've had other dreams where you have dreamt about specific puppets to create in the materials you're to use.
Yeah, and it's not a common experience for me. I mean, what I will say, you know, I was just listening to a story about how important sleep is for us, and how
right.
a lot of our creative energy comes from sleep, and they even put into words the sort of thing that I do, which is when I'm working on a new puppet and I come across kind of like, well, how am I going to make that work, kind of engineering-wise or otherwise, I'll sort of think about it before bed, and then in the morning, invariably, the solution will pop into my head at some point, you know, in the first couple hours of the day. So I've had dreams, though, that were more like a reoccurring dream is going to a puppet festival, and yet everything that I see and is amazing in the dream are things that my imagination has thought up. And so, you know, several times I've woken in the morning and jotted down ideas that I would use later in performances.
That's so empathic. I mean, it's telepathic. It's the idea that they come to you in your dreams, and then when you awaken, you're able to create them and create the material. And what comes to you is even the materials that you're to use.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, Joseph Campbell talked about, and Carl Jung talked about the sort of zeitgeist idea, that ideas are just sort of out there in the ether. And many artists, you know, artists sort of are in tune with the zeitgeist. And so several people, you know, when I was creating my Native American show, another troupe on the other side of the country who I'd never known, they created a shadow puppet show of Native American stories the same year I did. And I thought, whoa, that was a coincidence. And
nothing is a coincidence.
Yeah. And so
nothing is,
you know,
a coincidence.
The ideas are sort of out there in the ether. And then you just, if either catch them or you don't, you know, and so, very often I feel like, you know, when I was growing up, my mother was a Jungian, into Carl Jung, and had a whole mm-hmm. library of Jung, and she would go to Joseph Campbell lectures, and she would always ask me in the morning, what did you dream? Tell me about your dreams. And at a very young age, I began to have an appreciation of how the unconscious has ideas, you know, for you. And you know, when I was struggling, when I decided to become a puppeteer, I didn't know what direction to go in. And it was my mother who sort of guided me, said, well, you know, doors will open when you get to the right place. When you're on it, things will happen. Little might be a synchronistic thing, like you were mentioning,
that's
finding
right.
the nickel, or but things will happen. You know, when my career took off at that festival where I had that Native American head, that was. That I had gone on to a talent stage to show some of my work to my peers to get them to come to this festival. I was a little pretty well unknown. And in the talent show, I had developed a set of animals, puppets carved out of foam, and performed them. And after the performance, I got offers to go all over the U.S. to different puppeteers, communities, and whatnot to perform in the Midwest and in California and the Northeast. And after that, the man who had gone on just before me turned out to be David Sirodiak, who had come to my show in the fifth grade.
Interesting.
And it was so synchronistic that he would be
it
there
at
that moment.
It is synchronistic, and I don't believe that's all coincidence. I firmly believe that the universe is trying to tell us something, that people and situations come into our lives for us to connect with, to learn from, or for us
mm-hmm.
to teach them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what are you working on now?
Well, right now, I'm working, I've been inspired. I received my mom's her grandmother's diaries. And so
I'm sorry,
one of the,
you keep going
yeah,
in and out. Are you
okay,
moving around? Or
yeah, I was moving a second. Yeah, so
okay,
I've got to
stand still so I can.
Yep. Sure enough. Yeah, my mother gave me, when I was about 20, she gave me her grandmother's diaries from the 19th century. And they were pretty spectacular. There's an account of her and her husband, who was the entomologist who had written about monarch butterflies. Got to go, and because of his work, they got to go meet Charles Darwin at his home in England. And I
wow.
have the diary entry of the day they go and visit Darwin. And so I'm working on her diaries as a film, sort of an ongoing project of different stories that are just wonderful, written in the, like, 1870s around then. That's when they begin. And so
now, where was she living then?
They were living in Boston, and her husband's mentor and teacher at Harvard, Asa Gray, he had been with my great grandmother's father in the 1840s, collecting plant specimens from all over the South, right from the Asheville area that I live in now. In fact, one little obscure area, they came and stayed the night, you know, at a little inn, and I would, you know, over 120 years later, I would live, you know, a mile from that little inn. But they were taking these samples, plant samples, and sending them to seven scientists in Europe, and one of them was Darwin. And so that teacher had written a letter of introduction to Darwin to see if his student and his wife could come and visit him on their honeymoon, and then it happened. So it was. So I'm working with those materials. Mostly the work I do is for children. I'm not working on a children's production because Seasong was just so recent. But this film project and a few others are things that I'm developing now.
And so you use your own voice to create the characters. You create
yeah.
your own scenic design.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, you're more than a puppeteer. As
you
I
know,
mentioned,
that's the attraction of puppetry is, you know, there are lots of areas that that you get to be a playwright and the scenic designer, and you're creating the puppets, and then you're maybe creating a soundtrack, and I think that it's a very seductive. Do people go into puppetry? It's you're really creating a whole world in a way. So it takes lots of different skills, and that really appealed to me.
And you seem to be so multifaceted and talented. You had told me that you are a visual and spatial person.
Mm-hmm, yeah. And, you know, each of us, there's a great book about how each of us, by Howard Gardner, about multiple intelligences and how we each have a, you know, we can, if we tap into what is our natural gift, I had a daughter who was very kinesthetic, and she would get energy if she was dancing. And so we would, you know, I could do long division on paper with her and she'd go mad. But if I did it with sidewalk chalk out on the deck and she's leaping around doing the problem, she would get energy. And so that's a lot of the work that I do with the Kennedy Center, is working with children, and the arts really address children's multiple intelligences.
Able to bring in that energy?
Yeah. You know, and you know, now she's 29 she's got a little band and with her boyfriend part-time, and she tap dances on a box while playing the guitar and singing the song she writes. So she has that kinesthetic ability, that inner body, that when it's kinesthetic, it feeds her in some way. And we all have that. We all have a special area. It might be, you might be a visual learner like myself, or you might be a kinesthetic, or you might be a musical thinker, or some people learn very traditionally from linguistically and whatnot. Another daughter learned in social, a social interaction has to be part of the experience. That was the way she learned as a young person.
So your daughter, who's 29, when you say she's a kinesthetic, I mean, she's kinesthetic, when I think of that, it's through feeling. It's through touch.
Yeah, through movement. It was really movement. And,
movement.
You know, she was really into dance as a child.
Mm-hmm.
And just so when her body was moving, that's when her mind was
creative juices were flowing.
Yeah, that's when it happened for her. And for another one, it was musical. You know, I have three daughters, so they each learned in different ways. We all
I believe we all learn in different ways.
Yeah. And so, yeah, a lot of the teaching work I do through Kennedy Center is using puppetry, shadow puppetry particularly, because kids can learn it quickly. And then they're working interactively in groups. They're up on their feet, so there's some kinesthetics to it. There's visual, spatial for drawing and whatnot. And most of the arts are just really great at touching on a lot of these different intelligences.
Yes. Tell me about Beatrice.
Ah, Beatrice. Yeah, Beatrice is my little Mexican girl who's in the story of migration. And Beatrice, actually, the name means butterfly. That's why I chose it.
Uh-huh.
And I wanted to tell a story about just the amazing migration that butterflies take. And so the story begins in a little town in Michoacan, Mexico, west of Mexico City in the high mountains, where the butterflies are headed right now. They go to about five different sites, and she lives in a little town, and her grandfather teaches her about the butterflies. And then just as she sees her first butterfly coming down in the spring, her father and her begin a migration up into North America to work, whereas her dad will work for 6 months. And so there, her immigration follows the migration of the butterfly. So the story is telling about her experience as an immigrant, but also the story of animals that migrate to survive.
Butterflies, polar bears.
Yeah, godwit, a bird that flies up to a week without going to sleep, shuts down half its brain, the polar bear going out onto the polar ice caps, a mother sperm whale and her baby. All these stories are all told in her journey along the way.
And you created all the puppets for these.
Yeah, and it's sort of her legs hook to my knees, and so I'm dressed in black and disappear, but you see her in kind of a curtain of light. And then right before her, between the audience and her, is a very thin veil that I have an animation that I've created that she's performing inside this animation. And so it's like you're watching a puppet show inside a cartoon.
A show within a show.
Yeah, well, a technique within a technique, more
right.
So. Yeah. And so and it was an innovation that I made to create this show. It was one of the, you know, when I wanted to do this, I wanted to have her traveling and scenery, and I felt like a strong scenery was going to be needed that would really be more than a few scenes, but dozens and dozens of scenes. So you get the movement of her and looking out a bus window and traveling across the country and then these animals traveling, you know, flying over the ocean and whatnot. So all of that is done with taking visual art and then animating it. It was quite a process.
I would imagine. I was so fascinated by how lifelike you have made these rod puppets move. Their arms, their legs, their facial expressions, it's an amazing process.
Yeah, it's probably, you know, the key thing, my attraction to puppetry is bringing, you know, that bringing things to life. And wonderful thing that happened sort of in the creation of the monarch butterfly material is as I was exploring and studying. The word for butterfly in Latin is anima, which was a word I recognized from Carl Jung, meaning the soul. But following the word back to ancient Greece, where it was the word psyche, and it meant soul or to breathe life into something. And so the word animation comes from the Latin word for butterfly, which is to breathe life into something.
Into the soul.
And that's
and
what... Bring the
a
soul,
big part
so
of my work
soul into,
on the soul level.
Yeah, and so with a puppet, it's you're literally bringing something, breathing life into something, and that's where we get the word animation, putting a soul into something. We
and
animate
you certainly
it.
Do.
And that's the, you know, bringing the puppet to life, you know, even as a, even that moment back in fifth grade, you know, seeing these marionettes and sort of touching it and the way it was balanced and hanging from the strings, it looked like it was breathing. I mean, it floored me. And
really?
That's really the essence of what I try to do. Well, you know, telling stories, but actually just bringing pieces of foam or two-dimensional cutout silhouettes to life. And, it's kind of a shamanic act almost. It's a, to borrow that word, you know, I believe shamans at one time back in the cave used bones and skulls and furs and probably were the ones who first discovered puppetry. And they would use it in their rituals and magic to heal people, to sort of give them a belief in the supernatural, and what might be a clever trick or a magician's sort of trick was used purposely to create a in the person being healed sort of a magical experience that then they would give them a belief, and that would help their healing process, believing in it. And
there are those of us who are energy healers.
Right, yeah.
That and, don't use mm-hmm. all those gizmos. But as a person myself who does energy work, and I'll talk a little bit about that after your interview, but because I'm feeling my hands get warm, so there are people who are receiving healing right now, either listening or maybe they're going to try to call in. But when my hands get warm and turn a little bit of red, I know that healing energy is coming through me.
Right.
And in a sense, you're doing healing work. I mean, what you give to your public, what you give in your workshops, what you give when you do a show, it is healing. There are many ways to deliver healing. I think your daughter is a healer. I mean, in her own way, allowing her music, her dance, to flow through her to heal others. Do you know what I'm saying?
I think the arts do that in general. That's what we're doing. We're trying to share that creative energy that we're able to channel. Not everyone may be an artist, but using your gift is an irresistible urge to share it with others, to share that magic that we feel in it. That in my purpose in the work I do with children is to inspire them about nature, inspire them about the natural world or the wonder of a story, the wonder of a myth.
I wish everyone in the creative arts felt that way.
Yeah.
But you are definitely making such a difference in people's lives. Now, if people would like to reach you, you have a Facebook page under Hobie Ford. That's H-O-B-E-Y Ford.
That's right, yeah.
And also through the agency Lloyd, that's L-O-Y-D, Artists, mm-hmm. A-R-T-I-S-T-S, and that's mm-hmm. all one word, correct? Lloyd Artists.
Yeah, yep, LloydArtists.com. Or if they contact you, you could forward it to me.
Absolutely. I would be delighted. How can others watch this wonderful 8-minute video that I watched?
Yeah, well, if they Google my name, Hobie Ford, in PBS, the film comes up right away. And I
on PBS. I have Google Hobie, H-O-B-E-Y, Ford, F-O-R-D.
Yeah, and PBS.
And then go to PBS?
If they just search my name in PBS, the film link will come right up. It's the first thing that'll come up. And I have to share with your listening audience that I met you through your son, Dan, who is a puppeteer.
Yes, he is. That's one of his talents and hobbies. And I'm his mother, so I'm very proud of him. He is so multi-talented, and he himself started out as an illustration major at Mass College of Art.
Right.
And that drew him into other areas, so it's interesting. Yes, you saw him recently.
Yeah, I met him for the first time in off the internet.
Yes, he loves working with puppets and so the best way for people to reach you is through your Facebook page.
Yep. or LloydArtist.com. Or
Lloyd,
they can,
and Lloyd is with one L, everyone.
Right, that's right.
That's
yeah.
LloydArtist.com.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to view this wonderful, wonderful video, go to Google Hobie Ford and PBS, and you've won a PBS award.
Well, PBS won an Emmy for the program. So yeah. So, the director and videographer, it was in their name, and they shared the honor with me because it was a team effort. But it was their award. But it was such a wonderful experience working with them on it. They were all artists in their own regard, each of them.
Are you moving around again? Because we're
sitting right here. No, I'm sitting right here.
Interesting.
Yep.
if there's one message, because the name of this program is Discover Your Potential.
Right.
Is there one message you would like to deliver to our listening audience?
Yeah, you know, just follow your dreams and passions, and they're important. They're what I think life is all about. And I think it was Jung who talked about an acorn. You know, it has a potential to be a particular kind of oak tree, and mm-hmm. you know, so our job is to really follow those dreams and passions and to grow to your true self potential. You know, a lot of times we follow what others tell us what we think we
right.
ought to do.
If
my father had his way, I would have been a stockbroker, and that was soul-killing to me. I could not do that. So follow your dreams.
My mother wanted me to be a dental assistant.
Well.
I was a child performer.
Right. Well, you followed your bliss, as Joseph Campbell
would
say. And
then I shifted again to do my spiritual work.
Right, right.
Hobie, I can't thank you enough for taking time today. I know you've had a very busy couple of weeks touring and doing your shows.
But
thank you for today. And
well, thanks so
hopefully
much.
In the future, pardon?
Go to YouTube. Go to YouTube and look up my name there, and you can see some of the work. There's a lot of work up on YouTube.
Oh, it's on YouTube as well?
Yeah, sure. They can see my work there.
Well, folks who are listening, it's definitely worth. Go to YouTube. Go to the PBS. Hobie's work is absolutely amazing and mesmerizing.
I'm proud that you had me on your comeback show, and I wish you the best in your reawakening of your radio program.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you, Cindy.
Cindy Gilman is a certified holistic and Reiki and energy practitioner, as well as a spiritual medium. As a spiritual medium and empath, she conducts individual personal consults either by phone or in her office. All sessions are professional and confidential. For a phone consultation or in-office appointment, go to www.cindygilman.com or call 401-885-4115.
And we are back, and Doug is with me right now. He has been navigating the program. If you would like to call in, we only have a few minutes to go. But the number to call in is 888-627-6008. So what did you think about Hobie Ford?
Boy, what a talented individual.
He's just...
very well spoken as well.
Yes, very well read, very well spoken. And you must look at this video. His creative process is, as I said, it's mesmerizing. To dream about the puppets before he even creates them, and even the materials he's to use.
Wow, yes. Well, that sort of creativity is a blessing indeed.
It certainly is. I would like to mention before we go that in 2 weeks, we have a wonderful, wonderful guest, Brian Fox, who is an American painter. If you are a sports fan or an appreciator of the arts, you definitely will want to tune in to hear what Brian Fox has to say. And it has been an absolute delight spending this hour with you. I hope that you will join me again. I've always said there are two types of people, people who affect life and people who let life affect them. So be one of those people who affect life. Do something nice for yourself this week and do something nice for someone else. This is Cindy Gilman here to help you discover your potential.
Hello, I am Ron Hayden of Voices Unlimited. I've been writing and voicing radio and television commercials, toys, games, corporate sales and training, and so much more for over 25 years nationally and globally. I will write or co-write and voice your radio or TV spots, on hold messages, or whatever you need in one of my many voices or celebrity voices, custom characters, or an announcer voice. A great gift idea. Have me make a celebrity phone call for a special occasion. Just go to www.ronhayden.com to sample my voice demos. Email me at rhvoices1@msn.com. I look forward to working with you in a high voice, a low voice, or just my voice.
Is the only